Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. I want to remind you, you can go to KTAR.com/Arizona Votes and you can learn more about candidates here, candidate interviews, and all these important races. Very important race here in Maricopa County is the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. Returning as a guest on the show is Democratic candidate. And we are going to talk with Ms. Gunigal, Julie Gunigal. Let's talk about, you and I talked in hypothetical once before about what would happen if Roe v. Wade was returned to the states, and you had said you would not enforce abortion laws. Now that it is in practice, what are the laws going to look like in Arizona, and has your stance changed at all?
No, first of all, thanks for having me. And no, the stance hasn't changed at all. Not now, not ever. We should not be using the criminal legal system against patients or providers. But anybody who tells you that they know what the state of the law is right now in Arizona is lying. The state of the law is a state of chaos and confusion. We've got at least three conflicting laws that are on the books, some of which are enforceable, others arguably aren't. Some create steep criminal penalties, others create penalties up to and including the death penalty for providing or procuring an abortion. And no one knows exactly what's enforceable right now because our county attorney has not been clear, and neither has the attorney general's office.
We just talked with her earlier this morning, the interim county attorney, Rachel Mitchell. We talked with her earlier this morning, and she believes there's some clarity in the existing law and what can be enforced and what isn't. And it does not go after anybody, any woman that goes for an abortion. It does punish providers, though.
I listened to that interview, and I think that interview actually creates even more confusion, especially the statements about exempting patients who have experienced rape or incest. Because now the question is, because Arizona women who have been assaulted when Roe v. Wade was the law of the land, but wake up today and experience a positive pregnancy test, are now going to have questions from the county attorney. How are they going to obtain permission from Rachel Mitchell to obtain an abortion? What will they have to prove? What will be the standard of proof? Will they have to wait until their assailant is successfully prosecuted? Are we willing to accept the fact that in Phoenix right now, our rape clearance rate is less than 9%, which means those brave people who step forward and say that this happened to them, in fewer than 9% of the cases, is there ever an arrest? And in fewer than 2%, is there ever a conviction? So I think the recent statements by the county attorney, especially about rape and incest, only raise more questions that are to date unanswered, and one more reason why we shouldn't let politicians be making these reproductive choices on behalf of Arizonans.
But so in defense of that, or a little pushback on that, are you saying that the interim county attorney should have remained silent on that part of the issue when she was asked?
No, to the contrary. What I would have liked to see from the county attorney, in acknowledging that there is this uncertainty and that she intends to maybe exercise her discretion, is to say that until there's clarity from the courts and from the legislature, I'm not going to prosecute. That is the statement that would have been appropriate under the circumstances. But instead, to create an exemption and then not tell people who now need to use that exemption to obtain an abortion under cases of rape or incest how they get her personal permission to get that abortion, that is an unwieldy, impractical, and immoral set of decisions.
And just to clarify, because I know we've disagreed on this issue, but you still believe that it is the job of your office, using prosecutorial discretion, to not enforce this law because you don't think it's a good law?
Because I don't think it's a good law is not the way I would put it at all. The county attorney needs to be focused on the interests of justice. And right now, about half of all the cases that are referred to that office are declined because of the interests of justice. We have limited public safety resources and money. They should be spent on those crimes that matter most and most compromise community safety. Crimes of violence, crimes that target women, children, and our seniors, crimes against democracy and public corruption instances. But not this. This doesn't make anybody any safer.
Well, there is a segment of our society that would say that this is a crime against a child.
And And that's heard, but nevertheless, 80% of Maricopa County residents agree with me that we should not be using the criminal legal system to pursue these kinds of cases. So even in light of that, it's irresponsible to take these sorts of cases to a jury where there is no reasonable likelihood of conviction, knowing where Maricopa County residents are on this issue writ large.
Okay, and so let me shift before our time is up. I want to talk about the other statements made about the direction that the office is heading, a backlog of cases, decrease in cases sitting on desks of officer-involved shootings. Are you privy to any of that information as to what the direction the office is heading? Do you believe it is now headed in a better direction where it was before?
I haven't seen any evidence that it's headed in a better direction as was before. I mean, I think this is one more reason why we shouldn't be involving the prosecutor's office in abortion cases in light of this huge backlog. What I would like to see as county attorney is an independent unit for police use of force cases with prescribed timelines so that the public can trust that those cases are not going to be politicized, that there's going to be prompt decision making, and it's going to be done by prosecutors who are not working day in and day out with the same officers that they're asked to hold accountable with those sorts of cases. That's how we earn back the trust of the public on especially officer-involved shootings.
So there have been prosecutors, whether district attorneys or they are county attorneys, that are being very criticized by law enforcement and by members of the community for an uptick in crime with an approach that is less aggressive in approaching or in prosecuting crimes. Can you address that, and how do you believe that some of your policies would be accused of doing that same thing?
Absolutely not. So the policies that form our platform are based on not only talking to directly impacted people all across Maricopa County, but they're based in the best evidence and instances that we know work and are good public policy. They are prosecutorial policies that get at the root cause of crime, because crime prevention is what your prosecutor's office ought to be doing. They're policies that are based in using equitable discretion so we can remove the racial disparities in policing and prosecution. And they're policies that get at corruption. The public is tired of these sweetheart deals to folks like Charles Ryan, who receive, you know, a lesser sentence than anyone else would have under the circumstances. I apologize, lesser charges. Folks want to see that justice is truly equal, and that's what my platform gets to.
I always appreciate the time when you come on the show. And if people want to learn more about your campaign, where can they find you?
Well, likewise, and they can find more information about me and my campaign at gunnigle2020.com. I'm sorry, 2022.com, and that's G-U-N-N-I-G-L-E.
I appreciate the time. Look forward to talking to you again.
Right back at you.
All right. That is Julie Gunnigle, candidate for Maricopa County Attorney, a Democrat candidate. Be an informed voter. Again, you can go to KTAR.com/Arizona Votes. You can hear these interviews, and you can make sure you are an informed voter when it comes time for you to cast your vote. It's an important race, obviously a very, very important race. We're going to talk about more attacks on law enforcement. We had a police officer, a sheriff's deputy, killed yesterday in a horrific shooting again. And you're going to hear what the sheriff had to say, and we'll hear more about this suspect. All that's coming up next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Sticks and REO Speedwagon heading to Auction Pavilion on July 20th for their Live and on Zoom tour. Tickets are on sale now, but you can win a pair of tickets by visiting the contest page at KTAR.com. The suspect in the fatal shooting in Yavapai County has been identified. Robert McDowell, 61 years old, of Mayer, is charged with first-degree murder. The Department of Public Safety is going to oversee the investigation, and we're looking for more details, and we'll get them as they come out. Going to find out what kind of a criminal record this guy has. I want you to hear a few things. The description. This is Yavapai County Sheriff David Rhodes speaking about what happened and speaking about what happened in dealing with this suspect.
We don't know exactly what happened. 911 dispatchers, the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office, received a 911 call a little later, and it was from members of the community, neighbors there in Cordis, and they said that we had an officer in distress. Deputies immediately responded to that scene, and they found Sergeant Lopez unresponsive.
I want you to hear now as he talks about Sergeant Lopez. This is him speaking about this deputy, this Sergeant Richard Lopez.
But he'd started his career a little bit late. He left a career in management to come and work in public service and work in public safety. Served as detective. He was a negotiator on our SWAT team. One of the most impressive things, though, is he was a regular volunteer with Shop with a Cop, which is one of our biggest fundraisers for at-risk youth, and he never missed that in Prescott. Resident of Prescott Valley, he's got a wife and two daughters who are absolutely devastated.
The idea of shooting a cop used to be something that when it happened was such big news because it was so rare. Anybody that would assault or shoot a police officer was someone who was seen that had absolutely no limits. That if you were willing to shoot or kill or assault a police officer, you were dangerous because there was nobody that was off limits to you. It has become so commonplace, and I went through the list just in Phoenix earlier this morning in just what's happened in less than a year. And we're talking about, and I don't want to be, you don't even have to be, you cannot be over dramatic in describing these issues. Officer Moldovan, who was shot, the details of that shooting are so horrific, it still makes me sick to talk about what happened to this young man. He was shot and was severely injured with the first shot. And this suspect stood over the top of this police officer and unloaded the magazine and that gun into this police officer. And the only way he survived was because of his strength and the power of his family and prayer. I believe it was a miracle that this young man survived. But it was an execution. It was an execution-style shooting. And then as Officer Moldovan laid on the ground, so severely injured, this suspect tried to take the officer's gun out of his holster to get into a gunfight with the other cops who were coming to render aid. There were 9 officers that were injured at the scene of a shooting where the suspect was trying to lure a police officer into his home so he could shoot the officer in the head. The officer was smart enough to not enter the home, but was severely injured when he opened fire on that officer. 3 other officers were injured in the ensuing gunfight. A total of 9 were injured overall. There were 2 officers ambushed, and it was an ambush in Phoenix. When they were led past an apartment complex and they were ambushed by the suspect in the vehicle in front of them's brother with 18 shots from a 9mm handgun into their vehicle, shooting one officer and injuring the other with shrapnel. Domestic violence investigation in North Phoenix in the parking lot of a gas station as they were interviewing a woman who was afraid of her boyfriend and who was was reporting domestic violence and how scary he was and how dangerous he was. He pulled up into that parking lot, and as an officer approached his vehicle, he just opened fire in an unprovoked attack. And then there was a detective in recent weeks in Phoenix and South Phoenix who was working undercover in a car, unmarked, plain clothes, and was ambushed. And had she not had the presence of mind to put her bulletproof vest on, she also would have very likely been killed in that, but was severely injured. Those are just in recent memory of what this is. This is open season on the police. We have got to have a better moral compass. And as a society, we know that evil exists. But when we've spent the better part of 2 to 3 years demonizing the heroes and making the demons heroes, the role reversal that we've seen, and when police officers do the wrong thing, they need to be held accountable. There's no doubt. No one is saying that we should allow them, whoever they are, especially if they're a bad cop. There's a difference between making a mistake and committing a crime. But when you take an institution like law enforcement and you demonize it the way it's been demonized, and you marginalize it the way it's been marginalized, and you give the evil part of our public the upper hand in the court of public opinion, these things are going to happen. You can blame it on guns. You can blame, if you want to try to do that. These are evil people committing acts of evil. And if we don't stand up as a society and not just respect and honor what police officers do, but demand that people that commit crimes like this are held accountable, and they are not seen as heroes. I didn't say this, but just a few days ago in Glendale police were at a scene and someone opened fire on them from a distance away that had nothing to do with the crime they were there for. So they went and looked in this apartment complex at footage of security cam footage. One of the officers recognized one of the people that was shooting, and it turned out to be a 13 and a 14-year-old. And they had taken the 14-year-old mother's gun out of a drawer. 13-year-old popped off the first rounds, handed the gun to the 14-year-old who popped off rounds, and then they ran. When they were arrested, one of these teenagers said he wanted to kill a cop. We have got to do better. This attitude about policing has got to stop, from the people we elect to the people we appoint. It's got to stop. I want to talk about something about what happened in the January 6th hearings yesterday. We had Congressman Andy Biggs on with us. Going to reset a little bit of what the congressman had to say, but also want to go over some of the testimony that happened yesterday. And so we're going to do that coming up here in just a moment, because I think there's some valuable things in there that we need to talk about.
The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. There was an interesting conversation this morning with Congressman Andy Biggs. He has been connected by some with the violence that happened on January 6th. He denies any of that. I don't have any. As a matter of fact, I want you to hear what he said about that. I asked him to just say it for the record. I asked him about being involved in what happened on January 6th that devolved into violence.
No, not in the least. No relationship at all. It's been fabricated, and I've denied, Mike, you know this, I've denied this stuff 100 times. It just is taken on a life of its own, because that's what the left wants. It's the narrative the left wants to create.
And I would say to you that this is my criticism of what's happening. I believe everyone should be held accountable, including the former president of the United States, if they've done something wrong. I don't believe anybody should be above the law. I don't believe that at all. But what I don't like is, and I think, and to be fair, I said this about the Arizona audit. The people in Arizona that believe, and there are some that honestly believe that the election is stolen. These are good, smart people. They're not tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy theorists. There are people that genuinely believe, and you may think they're 100% wrong, but they genuinely believe the election was rigged or stolen. I would have been the angriest if I were one of those people, because there was no way, with the slant and the company they hired, that anyone outside of the people that already believed it were going to be convinced because of the group of people that were doing it and the way they did the audit. I feel the same way about this with the January 6th hearings. If you are somebody that believes, and you're entitled to your belief, that Donald Trump acted criminally, that what he did was criminal, and he should be held accountable, the problem I have with this is so politically slanted. Now, I know there are people who say, well, that's Republicans that are testifying. These are cherry-picked people to testify that are going to say bad things about the president with very little rebuttal. And I'm going to give you an example of that in a moment. But we should be doing things, if you truly believe you have the evidence, and I've said to people, people that I know, get me the names that they talked about having of all of these people when it came to the audit. Get me those names of the people that they say were turned over to the Speaker of the House, Rusty Bowers. He denies ever getting them. Somebody get me those names. I'll read them on the air. I've been wrong so many times in my life. I would do a mea culpa on the air for days on end if there was proof out there that I could read the names and do that. Nobody has it. So my point is, when you have proof, you bring in everybody. My friends, if they've got proof, not conjecture, not if this happened, this means this. If there's proof, they bring you proof and they say, read this or look at this. Tell me, not explain this away or what do you think this means? Here's proof. If you have proof, you go to court. What they're doing here is a hearing. They aren't bringing in rebuttal witnesses. There is no cross-examination. This is a one-sided story. And America sees it that way. Look at the results of what's happening. I want truth like everybody else does. I'm not afraid. Listen, I have absolutely no connection to Donald Trump. I voted for him twice. I agreed with his policies as president. But I have no reason, nor do I have a desire to defend Donald Trump. I want the truth, but I don't want to see anybody on either side of the aisle just get hammered for their politics. Go back and look. And this was a real trial. Go back and look at what some of the very same elected officials that are still in Washington, D.C., that are defending what's happening on this January 6th hearing. Go and look what they had to say when Bill Clinton was being impeached for lying under oath about Monica Lewinsky. It was all a hatchet job and a political this and a political that. And now look what's happening. But here is the thing that I want you to pay it, why I believe this is so politically charged and it makes people angry and it drives people away. A revelation about Trump's behavior came Tuesday from Cassidy Hutchinson, who testified before the House committee investigating the attack. Hutchinson said she learned of the episode from Tony Ornato. What in the world are you talking about? She's she is in front of a committee testifying about what somebody else told her. Everybody knows that's a joke. You know, my neighbor's wife plays tennis with a woman who's married to a Secret Service agent who told her that it's the same kind of telephone game. I don't care hearing things secondhand. You may firmly believe that Donald Trump acted criminally. You have every right to that opinion. You may think his behavior was not only immoral, it was illegal. But if it were you on trial, if it was you being accused of something, and they were holding hearings and they were bringing in people that said, well, someone told me, someone that was there told me, you can never allow that kind of hearsay in. Now, again, this is a hearing, not a court, so maybe those laws and rules don't apply. But then what's the point of the hearing? If the point of the hearing is about evidence and proof, bringing somebody in to testify, because what they're saying now is going to happen, is that the Secret Service agent that was there and the driver, there are people now that are going to say, we were in the car and that didn't happen. They're ready to testify to that effect. So if that's not true, how do you believe anything else she said? Will they bring these people in that are saying, hey, wait a minute, you guys are trying to get to the bottom of this January 6th thing, and we respect that, we understand it, but that woman said something I can tell you didn't happen. She wasn't in the car, and I was. Do you think that's valuable information? If you're getting to the truth, do you think it's valuable information? This is why, as emphatically as I was against my own party in the state I love, with the way the audit was handled being one-sided and predetermined in my mind, that's how I feel about this. This is one-sided and predetermined. This isn't an investigation. It isn't. And I don't care if it's whoever it is. I had a conversation with somebody that, you know, I don't like this because I'm a Trump supporter. No, that's not true. I am an American before I'm a Republican. I am all of those things. I don't want to see anybody behaving badly and getting away with it. If you break a moral code, if you do something that people believe is morally wrong, then you deserve to pay the consequences the next time that person runs for office. If you break the law, you should be held accountable for breaking those laws. That's everyone. I'm not afraid of the truth. If there's criminal proof that Donald Trump did something wrong, why would I be afraid of that? I'm absolutely not. But what's happening here? And so I'm asking the supporters of January 6th, don't you think that this hearing, that these people that put these hearings on, they called a special hearing to hear the testimony of someone who wasn't even there? They brought in a special hearing for this. You know what this is? Rumors. This is gossip. And don't you at least see it that way? Don't you understand why people are screaming about the one-sidedness when this woman wasn't even there? Somebody told me that this is what happened in the car. And now there's two people that they are saying are willing to come forward and say, we were in the car. That never happened. This is why I'm against what's going on. Further dividing and too one-sided. I believe both of those to be true. We now had a ruling by the Supreme Court about a coach praying after a game on the field. A ridiculous headline about religion and campuses. We're going to talk about that coming up in just a moment.
News 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Big changes, it seems like, in America in attitude from the Supreme Court. Are they getting it right? Are they not getting it right? One of the comments were made today on the show about we have a Supreme Court that's getting it right and being a strict constructionist and looking at interpreting the Constitution as it was written. So all those are legal questions that are way over my head. But I have read the Constitution like many of you have. I have a pretty good understanding of what I believe to be the intent. There's a great book called Original Intent that was written. And it's a great book. His name is David Barton that wrote it. He has a website called Wall Builders. And the idea, I just think that in principle, the separation of church and state, and then it's glanced over or it's glossed over after that, and it's just the way it's supposed to be. The idea that, especially in the founding of our country, one of the first things our founding fathers did when our country was established, there was a printing press. The first thing they printed was a Bible. That they were focused a lot more then. But the idea that they wanted the government to be able to control what you believed was the intention of the First Amendment, that they were not going to tell you who you had to worship, how you had to worship, or even if you had to worship. That's a fact. We welcome in this country, everyone of every faith is welcome in this country, and they cannot be put upon because their faith is different. The reason why I bring this up is, listen to this headline, Supreme Court school prayer ruling stirs debate over how far religion will seep into campus. What an absurd statement. Religion doesn't seep into a campus. We've watched people go in a different direction, which this country has a right to do. I am not going to be judgmental of anyone else. I've got my own backyard to clean up. There's no doubt about it. I fall short of my own beliefs and standards more often than I want to admit. But what this is about is this coach has a right, as the First Amendment protects, to worship any way he wants. If he wants to go to the 50-yard line after a game, on the field of battle, as they call it, and he wants to pray, he has an absolute right. If he tries to force students or players to go with him, now he's wrong. If he says, I'm a Christian, and if you're a Muslim or you're a Jew or you're Sikh or whatever, you're either going to pray my way or go pray by yourself somewhere else. He's wrong. But if he wants to pray anywhere at any time, how many times have we had this argument, heard the argument that in a school setting, if a child in our public schools wants to pray before his or her meal in the lunchroom, they wouldn't allow kids to fold their hands and bow their heads because that's a separation of church and state issue. How absolutely foolish is that? Well, okay, they can bow their heads, but they got to pray silently. They can't pray out loud. It's an absurdity. It is absolutely absurd. And when you have these questions about how far will religion seep into campuses, it is because we have no idea of American history. I think it was the pastor's name was Peter Muhlenberg. I know his last name is Muhlenberg, that called up the Virginia Regiment. They gave that famous sermon from Ecclesiastes, there's a time for peace and there's a time for war. And he was wearing his the garb of a pastor. And he gives this sermon in front of his congregation and then takes off his garb, his priestly robe, for lack of a better term, and is wearing the uniform of a soldier and called up the regiment out of his congregation. That guy's statue is in the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. Every state has two statues it used to be in what was called Statuary Hall, but they're scattered around the Capitol. As a matter of fact, I believe one from Arizona still is a monk. I believe it still is. So it's not a defense of religion. It isn't. It really isn't. I don't expect anyone to think like I do, believe like I do. I have zero expectation in that. But we all have a right to, and that's one of the great things about this country, is we have the freedom to worship any way we want, anytime we want, anyhow, you know, any way. And when you start limiting that because you're a government employee, that's foolish. That is foolish. If a teacher in a public school is Muslim and brings his or her prayer rug and they pray facing Mecca, they have an absolute right to do that. They have an absolute right to do that. And it's one of the great things about the foundation of this country is the founding fathers took all the oppression they lived under. They saw all of the things that they lived under for such a long time and wrote a constitution that limits the government's power against you. It doesn't give the government power. It limits its power. And we all should embrace that. And I just thought this headline was absurd. How much is religion going to seep into? The scare tactics are outrageous. They're absolutely outrageous. We go back to talking about the economy just after 11 o'clock at 11:05. 83% of Americans are cutting back on personal spending due to inflation. We're going to talk about how serious that is for all of us next.